Blog Talk Radio.
I'm here.
Good afternoon, Southern California. I'm Maureen, enter your Northern California connection.
And good afternoon, Northern California. My name is Bob Lang, your Southern California connection.
And together, we are just trying to get connected. Oh, what a day.
it's been a wild one here, huh? I mean, we had a short week in the markets, but because we had the holiday last week for President's Day, and it was just like condensing 5 days of the work into 4 days, but it's still
I used to dread, you know, when I was in the game at Bear Stearns. Oh, I dreaded those 3 day weekends. You literally pay for it for about another 10 days when the markets close.
Absolutely.
You know, one extra day.
Yeah, and you know, thankfully today is National Drink a Glass of Wine Today.
That was yesterday.
That's just like any other day for me anyway.
Well, it is like any other day. You're always a day off.
You know,
Bob. I know my national drinking days, and I take full advantage of them. Okay.
Hey, Maureen. You know what? We were talking earlier today, and it was about this making a murderer. Which is, I just wanted to just make a quick comment on it. It's just an amazing series, and I know you've been into it for a few months already, but it's just unbelievable.
Let's tell everybody. The documentary is called Making of a Murderer. It is on Netflix. It is 11 episodes or 12?
Ten.
I can't remember. Oh, it's 10. Okay, it's 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And they're long episodes. They're about an hour and a half long, aren't they? They're pretty long.
That's right.
Episodes. And it is a story about a man who comes from a small town in Wisconsin who was convicted of rape back in the mid-80s before they had DNA, and DNA cleared him. They released him from jail, and he ends up being accused of murdering someone, and without giving away too much of the story, a very controversial case, very controversial.
Well, it's
captivated you, right?
Absolutely. It's about all the timing that all these little events happen in there. And, you know, I don't, you know, you might say, well, they were all coincidences, but, you know, it's just too many to believe that it's just a coincidence. And, you know, this poor guy, I mean, I don't know whether he's guilty or not. I mean, he's sitting in jail or, you know.
I think it would be interesting if we could get his defense attorneys to come on and talk about this, because they have done several interviews, and Megyn Kelly has done, she did a whole show around this, and she showed things that the prosecution showed during the trial, which the documentary filmmakers chose to eliminate. We don't know why, but I still don't think that after watching this and then, of course, learning so much more, there's so much more you can read now about it. I just don't feel that he was capable of murdering this girl. And my husband, obviously a police officer, has pointed out that most murderers are very highly intelligent, very, very, very smart. Most people that commit crimes of this nature, they're highly intelligent. And this guy had, like, what, a 80 IQ or something? I mean, he was barely able to just go to school.
Yeah.
I'm going to see
if I can get a hold of Dean or Jerry, who are his, Jerry Buting or Dean Strang, who are his defense attorney.
I can get them to come on the show with us.
Yeah. It would be a great show,
and you know, he does have a big, high-powered Chicago attorney, two attorneys who are now representing him. So I don't know how much his attorneys will be willing to talk, because now maybe it's going to be reinvestigated. I mean, I don't know. So, but it would be really It would be really great, especially on the heels of our show last week with John Gibson talking about the OJ trial. Wasn't that fascinating to go back and
have him tell us about?
Yeah, I mean, there were so many things that they were dealing with back then that we don't have now. And number one, the internet and communication. You know, how he talked about being in that trailer and he was on a lift for 12 hours or 14 hours a day, giving live feed up to the minute updates to, you know, he worked for the local NBC station in LA, and then those clips would go out where, you know, I guess how it works is whatever Fox affiliate across the country, the nation, whatever, they pick up those feeds. They probably pay for them or however it works. But, you know, I definitely remember him as being one of the faces that when he turned on the nightly news, he'd be giving me, you know, the OJ update. But that was just that was a great show. He had some, if you guys missed it, go back. It's in our archives. We've reposted it. He's a great storyteller. And just, you know, with that, have you yet watched any of the People versus OJ?
I'm going to start doing it. But you know what I found fascinating, Maureen, was the fact that this was 20 years ago. And mm-hmm. John Gibson remembered details from the cases like it was yesterday. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And he came up,
well, and,
you know.
Well, and what I took from it, and the reason I got the idea for doing the show, is he's a friend of mine. He's a personal friend of mine on Facebook. We're personal friends. And he posted a picture of him and some of his staff in the trailer because all of this is coming up now, you know, because of the miniseries, everybody's talking about OJ again. And he posted a picture of them in the trailer and said, this is where we spent 18 months of our lives. None of us have a desire to see the miniseries. And I saw that on his Facebook page, and I thought, oh, he'd be great to have on because of the miniseries. So I have watched part one and part two of it. I think it's done very well. I think it's the things that have come out, like I mentioned on the show last week, you know, client attorney privilege. I mean,
sure.
I don't know who talked on their deathbed, if it was Johnny Cochran or Kardashian, but somebody gave it up. But like we said last week, you know, OJ is a felon and those attorneys are dead and it's 20, you know, who cares now? But,
that's right.
Very fascinating. It was just doing that show with John just really made me think of where I was. I was in such a different part of my life. My children were little. I was married. You know, it brings you back to all of what you were doing. And my daughter, she was about, maybe 7 or 8. And she remembers I would pick her up at school and come home and the OJ trial would be on. It was on. She goes, I just remember every day coming home from school and the OJ trial was on. It was always on. Mm-hmm. And around the time when the Bronco chase, you know, and it was happening, our phone rang. And that was back in the day when, you know, you had house phones. And my daughter Haley was, you know, like I said, a little girl. You can tell her anything. She's very gullible. So she answers the phone, and it's my brother. And she says, hello. And he says, hi, can I talk to your mom? And she says, who's calling? And he says, this is O.J. Simpson. And she threw the phone down and ran screaming out of our house that O.J. Simpson was on the phone.
No way.
But it was my brother. We were talking about it. She's like, I'll never forget that. I was so scared. I thought O.J. Simpson was calling my mom.
Oh, my God. Oh.
So the point that I'm making is that even a little 7 or 8 year old girl at the time was obsessed about everybody knew about O.J. Simpson.
Oh, sure. And you know what's interesting is about how these things span generations, because that was back in the mid 90s, right? Well, you know what was the big thing back in the mid 70s when I was a little kid and you
Watergate,
were little?
Watergate.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
Do you remember when it was on all day? Do you remember the summer?
I hated it because my mom wanted to watch it and I wanted to watch cartoons. You know, I didn't want to watch that.
Yeah, and it was on every channel. back then there was, what, 6 channels if you were lucky. You could move the antenna and get something, you know. But, yeah, it was on. And it was summer. It was summer vacation. It was Watergate.
It was like, you know, it's terrible. I mean, who wants to watch that, you know? I mean, when your ears are on your bald, you know, who cares, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, you know, we were – one time we were in Las Vegas, Maureen, and we were sitting in the hotel room, and there's my mom smoking away and watching the Watergate hearings. I'm like, this isn't fun. No, who cares? You know, it's just, but, you know, it's –
Well, okay, that was something that had never happened. Then I have to say the O.J. trial is far more interesting than the Watergate incident, but the O.J. trial was something that we had never seen before. And, you know, I don't know if I asked John this or not, but I wonder if we would ever have anything like that again. I can't imagine something like that captivating us again. I mean, that captivated us for 18 months. We just couldn't get enough. And I think everybody learned a big, hard, fat lesson. I mean, first of all, I did say this on the air last week that my husband said that, you know, now you go to somebody's house and he would have been arrested. So he would have never probably been able to kill her because he would have been in jail.
True.
He would have, you know. So that's, thank God, those laws have changed dramatically. But, you know, so much has changed and so many things are different. And I don't want to say we're just, like, immune to it, but I really can't see a big murder trial like that captivating us anymore. Could you? I can't think of anybody that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I think that something, you know, it was just the fact that he was a celebrity and, you know, he was so much bigger than her. And it was just the crime was just so atrocious. And, you know, we just go into these other phases, other levels of that of despicability and you know, crimes and so forth. It's just everything. We just move one level higher than the previous level every single time. So,
our tolerance level, right? Like we just tolerate. You know, we become numb to it. Like remember when we were kids, we had the Zodiac Killer. You know, that was like so. You know, nowadays that's like preschool. They would have caught him in 5 minutes with DNA and whatnot. I mean, you know, every generation has their, you remember the Los Angeles, the Hillside Stranglers? That was, you know, scared the death out of me when I, you know, that. So, you know, we all have our, but I think as far as like a celebrity, I was trying to explain it to my son and he actually sat down, he's watching the miniseries and he actually thanked me because he's enjoying it. And he was a toddler when it happened. So he has no memory. But I was explaining to him how big O.J. was. Like, you have to go back and remember, he was kind of like the Joe DiMaggio of our generation, maybe. I mean, he was the first athlete that you saw make commercials and the Hertz. And everybody loved him. He was handsome and charismatic, and he was always on TV, and he was on Monday Night Football. And he was like, he was just,
he was godlike, right? Wasn't he? I mean, a lot of people thought, you know,
well,
nobody. He was the best.
Yeah.
He was the best running back in the NFL. He went to USC. He won the Heisman Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was untarnished, you know, and all of a sudden this whole thing happened.
And to think that he was so good at leading a double life, you know, so that just shows how good he was of making himself look, you know, bigger than he really was. And there's a really good scene in the first episode of the People versus O.J. It's a scene where the cops find the blood trail leading into Rockingham, which is his estate in Brentwood. And, you know, they go over the fence and all of a sudden they walk up and there's this massive statue, like in this beautiful garden with lights and a waterfall, and it's this huge statue of O.J. in his uniform, number 30. He's probably wearing his Giants uniform, I guess. And all four of the cops have their flashlights up, and they're just staring at it like in disbelief, like, "Oh my God!" You know? And it was one of those scenes that captivated. Like they just couldn't believe. I mean, first of all, who has a life-size statue of yourself in your courtyard.
Sure. Yeah. Well, listen, he was all about OJ, and even for himself, and you know, that's the sort of person that he was, and you know, couldn't get away from the spotlight,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a great show. Thanks, John, for coming on and sharing all of your insights with us, because I couldn't imagine. I mean, I was a wreck after being on our feet. How long? 14 hours of covering the GOP debates at the Reagan Library. Could you imagine 18 months of that?
Oh, I know. Well, speaking of debate, we had a debate this week, but we do have a couple of primaries coming up tomorrow, Maureen, in South Carolina and Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think about that? What do you think about that?
Well, I just think the Trump machine is unstoppable, and I'm saying this because I'm hearing the lame stream, the regular networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, they are saying that they should start preparing themselves for Trump getting the nomination. I've heard a few of the reporters say this.
And you know what? And they're gritting their teeth while they're doing it, right? You
know,
here's the thing: is that Trump brings great ratings for these channels, for the CNN or these news programs, news channels, but they don't want mm-hmm. him there for some reason. So you know, the media thinks, you know, it's interesting that the media thinks they have so much control, and to a certain degree they do, but they believe that in themselves they have so much control over politics and over policy and that sort of thing, but you know, he doesn't care. And, you know, frankly, on the other side, neither does Bernie Sanders, you know, and he's not the most attractive-looking candidate either.
But you have to admit, Trump has been in the media most of his life. He knows how to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
He's had more media experience and expertise than any of the candidates, even Jeb Bush, even the governors. He
yep.
knows how to use the media in his advantage, and that is why. So he lost to Iowa, okay? Cruz and Rubio each spent a little over $30 million just in Iowa. Trump spent $6 million of his own money, yet
right.
raised $6.5 million for the Wounded Warriors. So Jeb Bush paid almost $1,300 per delegate, per person to get out there and vote for him. And look at
wow.
how badly he lost.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's make or break this weekend, isn't he? I mean, if he comes in fourth or worse on both of these,
he's out of it this
done.
Weekend. This is it for him. Yeah, him.
Yeah.
What a disappointment. I never liked him. I didn't like him from this. You know what I've been saying the whole time. You know. I think I'm going to be invited to the inaugural. I think I'm going to get myself. I will get invited to the inauguration.
As long as Diamond and Silk pick out your dress, then you're going to be invited, right?
Oh, and you know they'll be there. Maybe I'll be at their table. In fact, good thing you mentioned that. Diamond and Silk will be with us next week. You will not be with us. You're going to be traveling, but I'll be hosting. I'll find somebody to co-host with me. And Diamond and Silk will be with us. Nobody better to come in next week and talk about what their man Trump is going to do this weekend. I mean, they are going to come. They are actually in South Carolina right now because they both live in North Carolina. And for those of you who've been living under a rock, Diamond and Silk are these two hilarious women who came out months ago with a video that went viral because they love Trump, and they have just taken off. They have their own. Do you know that they have their own Diamond and Silk gift shop? You can buy the T-shirts, the Ditch and Switch, and you can buy the glass that Silk is always drinking out of, and you can buy the Stump for Trump coffee mug with the diamonds on it. Oh my gosh, they're hilarious.
They're a marketing machine, aren't they? I mean, but you know what? I don't know of anybody who has been more passionate about their candidates than these two. Do you?
Oh, they totally believe in him. And they've met him. He has brought them on stage. He says that he is so sincere. And I believe that. I have never liked Cruz. I've never liked Rubio. they're little puppets. They're just made out, you know, it's like the Republican Party just pumped them out of one of those little cookie cutters, and, you know, that's what they look like. And I've never liked them. I've never liked them. They've never appealed to me. And, you know, Donald Trump just came out and, well, you know, I mean, it's history now what he's done. But, I mean, they have him projected to win South Carolina like 37%, and I think Rubio's behind at 14. I mean, when are they all – this is what I told when I was on earlier in Nebraska. I said it's going to be – the smartest thing ever would be Trump and Kasich.
Yeah.
That would be the smartest ticket.
Well, I think Kasich could bring a very important swing state, which is Ohio. And, you know,
yes.
Either Ohio or, you know, I think he's basically, he wouldn't go with Rubio. And he really doesn't like Ted Cruz. He basically said he's done with Ted Cruz. He wouldn't do anything with that guy. Anyway, now he called him a liar the other day, which is true. I mean, listen, the one thing I like about Donald Trump, you know, he calls a spade a spade. Right, he's not gonna.
Mm-hmm.
If you're lying, he's gonna call you out and tell you you're lying about something. He's not gonna, you know, pussyfoot
because
around.
He's not not a career politician. I mean, look at
that's right.
Look at Ben Carson. Look at Trump. They're not. You know, look at people are. You know, tired of it. And what Cruz did in Iowa to Carson was wrong. And I think it's going to cost them the election. I really do.
I wouldn't be
because
surprised.
When Carson drops out, which you know he will, he's not going to get those votes are going to go to Trump. I'm telling you right now, they're not going to go to Cruz.
No.
And
no,
Carson
you're right.
has a lot of supporters out there, so Cruz made a big mistake on that one.
I think it's and Cruz got a lot of supporters from like Scott Walker when he dropped out, even though he didn't have very many.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then of course when Jeb Bush has probably got a lot of followers too, and he's gonna, you know, who's he gonna throw his allegiance behind? It's probably not gonna be Cruz either. I mean, he's not a big, you know. So you know, I think he's gonna go with the guy who's gonna, you know what? At the end of the day, Maureen, all they really want to do is beat Hillary or Bernie, and it doesn't matter. If it's Trump, they have to.
Well,
have to throw the
did you see right. the? Did you see the projections of how hippie Bernie is gonna? I mean, he's projected like 68% to beat Hillary. They say she's gonna take South Carolina. She's gonna get the black vote. She's got South Carolina locked up.
Then,
but what does it matter?
And then
she
about,
got killed
how about,
in.
In New Hampshire. Yeah, how about
she got killed in New Hampshire, but she got all the delegates. You know that? She got the superdelegates. I mean, it's just insane. It's really, I think that we should just vote like we do on American Idol. We should use our phones. They can track it. You can only vote once. I'll bet you American Idol and Dancing with the Stars has a far better way of tallying and collecting and gathering votes than voting for the president of the United States.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I think, you know, voting for the did you know that this election is the only one where we as citizens do not directly vote for the candidate?
Because we're always been that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're voting for
the Electoral College.
The Electoral College. It's insane. I mean, what you know, this is why. You know, popular vote doesn't count anymore, and it's too bad.
Ever since I was in high school, this was always a debate. We should get rid of the Electoral College, and I think that they should. But you know, it's just I don't know. I just want to be able to vote from my phone.
Mm-hmm,
Apple,
mm-hmm.
Hey, they can't. Apple won't even break into your phone. I could be a terrorist with my phone, and Apple's going to protect me. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, look, even Donald Trump, interestingly enough, sided with the government, sided with the FBI, and saying that they should have just done it quietly, Maureen. I think if they'd have done it really quietly and secretly, I'm all for privacy, but you know what? If they get some information out of this guy's phone, then he'll even tell you everything changed on 9/11. Right. I mean,
exactly.
Course, privacy,
exactly. That's what I was just going to say. we all had to give up a certain amount of our privacy and our legal rights to try to keep this country safe. We all did.
Yep. And I think that, you know, even Donald Trump said the same thing, too. He said, look, you know, we're all entitled to as much privacy as we possibly can until it infringes upon the right of the majority of everybody else, you know, and mm-hmm. we're at war. We're in a battle here,
yeah.
Right? And who knows what it may never end, right?
So, okay, so first of all, did Apple stock do anything today in reflection of this controversy?
No.
Nothing.
No,
okay.
Second question. Okay.
But Bob, let me ask you, don't you think Apple has this technology?
Sure they do. Absolutely. I think they could have done it in 10 minutes.
Right?
Could have done it in 10 minutes. They could have quietly given the information out to the government and nobody would have known.
They're trying to say that Apple is trying to say it would cost them $1 billion to build this equipment that would, you know, open this phone. And I can't believe that. They have to have a way. I can't believe it. I'll bet you they could give it to your son, who's a whiz, and he could probably figure out how to get into it.
You know what? There was a guy who was interviewed on CNBC today. He's a very famous tech guy from Silicon Valley. His name is John McAfee. You've probably heard of McAfee.
Mm-hmm.
McAfee.
Well, McAfee, of course.
Right. They were bought by Intel several years ago. But anyway, he created all this security software stuff back in the day when nobody was even doing it. And he was on there. He's actually interestingly enough, this guy's actually running for president. If you didn't know that, he's on Libertarian ticker. He's a total nutcase. But anyway,
all those techs are.
So he came on and he said, look, I could figure it out. I could uncode that, unlock that phone in 3 minutes, and the government would have what they needed in 10 minutes, and it'd be over.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think you could take it to any Apple store, and one of those kids could get it open for you. I mean, I just think it's all smoke and mirrors. Apple is saying no, we won't do it, but they've already done it, and you know, I do not believe for 1 second the FBI did not win and get that phone opened. I don't believe that because if they did, we are in serious trouble.
I think this whole thing backfired on Apple. I think what their whole point was that they were going to get some publicity for being, you know, righteous and with the with the American people, with the Constitution and that sort of thing. But I think it kind of backfired in their face, don't you? Because I think they wanted to make a point. And I think, unfortunately, you know, people are scared and they're worried about terrorism more than they are about their losing some of their freedoms, don't you think?
Right. Yeah. But you know what, Bob? It's been a long time since 9/11. I mean, you remember the weeks after, you know, I was working at Bear Stearns. I mean, you never saw such patriotism, such honor to our first responders. Everybody had the flag outside. You know, it was a different and it's a shame to say that as more days go by, more people forget. Kids weren't born yet. They don't, you know. And so we forget that. And if it would have been the day after a massive 9/11, that phone, believe me, there would have been no backlog or, you know, backpedaling whatsoever.
Absolutely not. And the interesting thing is that when George W. Bush was the president of the United States during right after 9/11, a lot of our freedoms were sort of taken away or challenged with the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
So those these are listen. I mean, you know, Senator Hillary Clinton back in the day signed off on that. So you know,
voted for the Iraq War.
Oh, sure, absolutely, and voted for the Iraq War and everything, too. And you know, listen, I mean, I just think that, you know, we're in a constant war right now. Who knows when it's ever going to end? It may not end in ever, and we have to
It may not.
Ourselves.
It has been going on since – these are religious wars that have been going on since the dawn of time, and this is all about religion, right?
Yep.
It's the Muslims
right. Exactly.
wanting to take over, and it's been going on since the dawn of time. So it is something that – we either have to learn to live with it, but be smarter and wiser, and like Trump says, shut down the borders, know who's coming in and out of this country, get those visas. If you, I mean, if I go to Paris and decide I'm going to stay an extra 2 months, they're going to find me and throw me out. We don't do that here.
No, that's right. Well,
no, I guess
you know,
from what I heard. No, I'm sorry, but I heard that because Kate Stiley, the girl that was killed in San Francisco by the illegal aliens, her parents live 10 minutes from me. She grew up in a town just a couple towns over from where I grew up in. Very, very, very high income, very, very nice place, very beautiful area where she's from. And I understand that Trump's going to really use her story in the next debate. I guess that's going to be one of his big things that he's going to bring out. And he, I guess, was speaking about it again today in reference to what the Pope was saying, and that maybe the Pope ought to go sit with Kate's family and see how they feel after losing their daughter to somebody who was here illegally. And I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant move on his part.
Well, I don't know if you saw some of the posts that were up on Facebook yesterday after that little exchange that the Pope had about the fact that Donald Trump supporting building a wall is not Christian or something like that.
The giant wall around the Vatican.
Why do you have that? Why do we have that there?
Well, exactly. And you know that wall's been there since the Romans. You know, it's the whole...
Absolutely.
Christians and the Romans. But I'm not happy. I am a devout Catholic, cradle Catholic. My son even went to a Catholic university. I mean, I'm not happy with the Pope being a political figure. I wasn't raised in the church thinking that our Pope had anything to do with politics. We were raised that he was the highest of our church and not to have – I never remember ever a Pope commenting on a president or an election for that matter. And remember when Kennedy was elected and he was a Catholic and everybody thought, oh my God, the Pope's going to run the country now. I mean, Kennedy didn't even have any connection like this with the Pope. I mean, it's just not right.
No, I agree. And you know, John Paul II, you remember him? He was a Pope quite some time, the Polish Pope.
He's going to be sainted, as a matter of fact.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
he's going to be sainted.
He didn't really get involved with the politics, although he did you know, fly around and go to visit lots of different places. But he made a decision not to get involved in that sort of stuff. And so it was, you know, it was good. He did the right thing. But this new Pope.
No, it's very very
I don't
disappointing. I don't know if he's, you know, he's. It didn't make me proud to be a Catholic yesterday when I was listening to the Pope, and that's not the way that we were raised. The Pope was the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Yep.
So,
Anyway,
I have an interesting story about Popes, so I'll tell you this is interesting. So, I was married, my first husband and the father of my child. I was married to David Urbanus. Last name is Urbanus. He's Italian. Everybody says Urbanus, and it's spelled U-R-B-A-N-U-S. So everybody would say, that doesn't sound Italian. I'm not Italian. So I said, well, it's in the Book of Romans. Urbanus, the name is in the Book of Romans. There were six popes who were named Urbanus. And there's a Saint Urbanus at the Basilica. I mean, it is the most Roman Catholic name you can have. It is, I mean, any priest that ever has met my children or me when I was Urbanus, you know, it's just very, very Roman Catholic. So my son's name is Patrick Urbanus, so I double sainted him. He's Saint Patrick and Saint Urbanus. So I always say, you're double sainted on both ends. You got no problem. So when the new Pope was brought in a couple of years ago, I was texting my son because Patrick was actually at Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame, for his interview to go to business school there while the Pope was being selected, while the cardinals were sending up the smoke. And then he was at Notre Dame when all the bells were ringing when the new Pope was announced. And I kept saying, please pick the name Urbanus. Please pick the name Urbanus. Patrick would get into Notre Dame without a problem if the new Pope picked the name Urbanus. Because, you know, they select their names. Yeah, they select their names when they, you know, and I was like praying, please pick the name Urbanus. Oh, my gosh, they name a wing after my son at Notre Dame.
Wouldn't it be awesome? Oh.
But isn't that, that's a pretty good story, though. It really, it was, I just sort of got the chills when I thought about that because he was at Notre Dame interviewing. They recruited him to go to business school. They waitlisted him twice. But he was there on the hallowed grounds of Notre Dame, and all the church bells, he has video of it, all the church bells were ringing, and it was saying that we had a new pope. So that's my pope story.
So we were talking earlier, Maureen, and I have a interesting story. Did you want to?
Is this the teaser about how you lost 25,000 in 10 minutes and you were not at a crap table? Well, you were at a crap, maybe.
Yeah. So it was one morning. I was I was still trading options. I was kind of getting started with my day. It was probably in 2007 or 2008, and so I had a lot of long call options on, and options are a derivative of stocks. So I had I get some great leverage with options.
And explain call means you're betting on the market going up.
Well,
and you weren't covered.
In this particular case, there was a particular stock, and it was Google. And so my bet is that the stock is going to go higher within a short period of time. And if it does,
and you had a strike price, right? You probably had a strike price in place.
That's right.
But you didn't have a hold on it.
Right. Correct.
If we're explaining this to people who are obviously not at our level of training, is basically you laid money out, not protecting, hoping it would hit 21, and then you walked away. So that, you know how people, we have to explain it because people don't understand. But you had long call. I totally am getting what you're saying. So you had money out there. You weren't covered.
So, so it's about 6:50 when the market's been open 20 minutes, I didn't really think much of it. I had a big size position out there. I think it was about $50,000 worth of call options out there. I had, you know, and so Mother Nature called, right? And so I go to the bathroom, you know, I
like
go to the bathroom
and a different kind of crap table.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. So I go to the bathroom. I'm not, you know, and I leave my desk, obviously, and this is before you know, I had an iPad or something like that, so I wasn't able to pay attention to what's going on. So I go away for literally 10 minutes. I wasn't gone longer than 10 minutes, Maureen. And I come back, and Google stock is plunging. It's plunging.
Yes.
And I look at my account, and literally 10 minutes later, I'm down $25,000. I'm like, holy cow, what happened?
So you obviously didn't put a strike price at the height or at the low. You just were, we call a naked position. You were totally out there naked.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
That was a naked call.
Who thinks that when they go to the bathroom break for 10 minutes, they're going to get slammed, body slammed here like I did. So,
well,
what happened?
That's why you install a toilet at your desk.
Yeah, a squatty potty or something like that, right? Or something, you know. I'm looking around, looking for news. I'm like, what's going on? The stock is down like 8%, 9%, literally. And you can see the bar on the chart. It just like dropped like a stone.
What year was this? Was this like 2008 when everything was tanking? Or?
No. It was well before. I didn't want to say it was 2007. Early middle of 2007.
Okay,
so it was, So I found out what tipped people off to sell the stock was that the CFO was at a conference, and he said something to the effect that, "Hey, our growth rate isn't gonna be like this forever," and that was it. That's all he said. You know, he didn't say anything really.
I think I remember that happening. I was probably I was on the desk then. I do remember that happening.
I mean, he didn't even.
But
really
I didn't go to the bathroom. We weren't allowed to go to the bathroom.
Oh, I know. You had to hold it. You had to hold it until 1 o'clock, right? I mean, that was really.
We did. I'm not kidding you. And honestly, I remember just not even thinking about going to the bathroom. Like, oh my God, you know, I had so much pressure. You know, the stress was. But if we did go, I mean, obviously we could if we had to. You had to have somebody at your desk. You know, we couldn't leave the desk. We could not leave our desk unattended.
Well, you want to know the bad. You want to know the bad part of the story. I mean, that was bad losing that kind of money. But you know, the really bad part of the story is that my partner at the time I was working with, told me that he had bought some put options, which is the other side. You're looking for the stock.
Which is
down
when you're winning. When they
the stock. So he had bought some put options that morning on Google, and I'm saying to myself, "Oh, you're such a fool! You're not going to make any money on that. I know. I know my calls are going to be good, right?" And I come back from the bathroom, and he puts the message in my instant messenger saying, "Hey, I just banked $20,000." And I'm like,
"Oh my God! Were you trading? Were you trading for a fund then?"
No, it was my own money at that time. It was my own account.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I mean,
that's why I people ask me all the time if I trade. Oh, no, because I hate it. I'm not going to, I keep saying I'm going to get together with you and I'm going to get my money. I say it every day. I'm going to start trading with Bob. And I'm like, it's just like working again. Like I did it for so long. I wouldn't enjoy it. I'll give you my money, Bob. You can, but you can't go to the bathroom on me.
I can't go to. Yeah, right. I'm tethered to my chair. I mean, everybody knows that I. When things are going poorly, I have a toothbrush right next to my desk. So you know.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen it all happen. Hey, have you heard of the new miniseries? It's on Showtime, Billions.
No, I haven't.
It's about a hedge fund.
What is that?
Oh, gotta watch it. It's Bobby Axelrod is the guy's name. He runs this huge hedge fund in New York. He's worth billions. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It is not my life. I was never a billionaire hedge fund manager, but I worked right next to so many of them. It's incredibly done. Oh, it's so good. You got to catch it. It's on demand. I think it's only in, like, maybe the fourth episode, so it's still kind of new. But it's for us market lovers, it's a great show. They do a really good job of not dumbing down the business. You know what
did
I mean?
Absolutely. Well, did you know that there's going to be a movie coming out in the summertime? My friend Dawn had trolled me about this. I had no idea. She saw the trailer for this. It's called Money Monster with George Clooney and Julia
Julia
Roberts.
He's going to be the Jim Cramer. It's like he's like Jim Cramer.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
I did see the trailer. I forgot to tell you that. It totally is like he's a Jim Cramer.
Yeah, well what happens is this guy Jack O'Connell, I guess his name is,
he invests all his money. And the guy
loses money.
Yep.
And the hedge fund manager, he holds him hostage along with the producer or something like that.
Julie Roberts. Oh yeah, no, that looks like a good movie. That looks like a really good movie. I mean, totally blown way out of proportion. Millions is more like, yeah, this stuff really goes on. Because so many of my friends have been calling me and saying, "Oh my God, I'm watching Millions. It just makes me. It reminds me of you so much." But yeah, I wonder how you're gonna have to ask Jim the next time. You'll have to ask Kramer the next time you see him what he thinks about that, because it's not very. I'd be a little nervous.
No, I know. I'm telling you, he's. I'm sure he knows all about it. I would not be surprised if they contacted him in doing the research for the movie, huh?
Oh, the trailer. He's got the same thing. He's got the sleeves rolled up. I mean, it's look the trailer up online. I'm sure you can see the trailer online.
Yeah. So,
okay. There's a couple things I wanted to say. Back in September, we were live in the studio at LA Talk and had my friend Stacey with us. Exactly, it was exactly 6 months to today that we were down there, and we had Chase Bryant on our show. Do you remember when he called into the show?
That was a great show. Absolutely. Yep.
Remember? Yeah. So Chase Bryant was the opening act to Tim McGraw, and I took Stacey, who's been my friend since we were newborn babies, brought her down. We went to the studio. We had lunch down on Sunset. We had the greatest weekend. And we actually got backstage passes to go meet and greet Chase and Tim McGraw, but Tim McGraw got sick, and the show ended up being canceled, which was so disappointing. And we ended up being at Disneyland. And remember, I was joking with Chase about meeting us in the teacups. And so he was supposed to be on with us today, and I think he probably got scared that I was probably going to, like, you know, I think he's scared of me because I was, like, stalking him.
Oh, my goodness.
But Chase Bryant, please, everybody, he just came out with this new video. It is so darn good. He's really making a name for himself. He is going to be live in San Jose tomorrow at the Rodeo Show. It's a club. It's a venue. And his people were so kind. He was going to come on with us this afternoon, but his show, it's just too close to his showtime, and I can imagine he has to get into rhythm. You can only imagine what kind of mood they have to get into before they do their show. So
right.
He was not able to be with us today. He did his PR person sent a beautiful message telling our listeners thanks and that he will come back at another time. But he did send along two backstage passes for Stacey and I. So we will be backstage tomorrow night with Chase Bryant in San Jose, and I'm so excited that, because to be honest, I was so excited to go to see Chase Bryant and Tim McGraw because I had the backstage passes. That was what I was the most excited about. So now I'm just so thrilled that we get to go backstage and meet him, and I'll try to be good. I won't, you know, he might have like a 10-yard perimeter around himself or something, afraid of me. I'm going to come and get him.
One of our other friends on the show, Dina Martin, was performing or was going to be down in the desert, down in Palm Desert. I think it was some sort of it was a golf tournament or something like that for Frank Sinatra, right?
Isn't she in Indio? Isn't it in Indio? Isn't that where she's going to be?
It's in Indio, yeah. Yeah, it's about a half hour east of where east of Palm Springs. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you really have to get your mom and dad into one of her shows, and we need to have Dina, you know, meet with her and take care of her.
Yep. Absolutely.
And
yeah,
we've got to get Johnny Mathis on
wonderful.
The show, too.
Johnny,
yeah,
we got to get Johnny
on
the show. We're going to go to New York next month, Maureen. My parents and I, my dad hasn't been to New York in over probably 60 years, so we're going to go to New York City and Bart. I'm going to take him to the Exchange. We're going to hopefully go see a taping of Bad Bunny with Jim Cramer, and then we'll also go see the taping of Fast Money.
Are you going to be on with Jim Cramer next month?
Probably not, but we'll just go sit there and watch a taping of the show. So that'll be
how
fun.
How fun! Oh,
get a chance
excellent.
To meet.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll be doing that. They're going to go see Johnny on Friday night, and my mom always manages to get backstage and talk with Johnny and schmooze with him for a little bit, and she does the whole nine yards.
Well, yeah, she's a darling. I love your mom. Your mom and I have become very good friends through Facebook. So next week we have Diamond and Silk. You will not be here. I might call in, like maybe I'll call Tobin Smith or something, and he'll co-host with me. But I have, we have a great lady. She is running for Republican congressional seat in the Central Valley. She's a sergeant in the Stockton Police Department. Stockton is a very dangerous city. It's no joke. She's a 19-year veteran sergeant, and she's running for Congress. Her name's Catherine Nance. She is fantastic. Please, everybody, tune in for Catherine and Diamond and Silk. It's going to be a great show. I'm super excited. So maybe I'll just do the show myself, because there's going to be so much talking going on that you wouldn't be able to get a word in it, right?
I'd just be sitting back.
So, okay, let me ask you this, Bob. So our current president has made history, again, in not a positive way. President Obama is the first sitting president not attending the funeral of a currently presiding, sitting Supreme Court justice. Thoughts?
You know, it's a real sad day for the United States to be an American here when that sort of thing happens. And to not honor this great man who was a servant for 30-plus years on the court.
Almost 40 years.
Okay.
Yeah,
and he
30 years, you're right.
He was nominated by our great president, Reagan. Ronald Reagan, in 1986.
Yep.
I think it's just a disgrace. And, you know, listen, I mean, if anything, at least Obama is consistent, right, with what he does. I mean, he just doesn't do it. He doesn't do things correctly. He doesn't do things to honor the United States of America.
Yeah. Do you realize that he went to Walter Cronkite's funeral and spoke? But he's not going to Justice Scalia's funeral.
Let's just, you know, I mean, he was 79 years old and probably died of natural causes. But you know what?
I don't know. I think it's fishy. There's something that's not smelling right with this death.
You know
Something's
what?
Not right.
But you know what, Maureen? It doesn't shock me when he doesn't go to a funeral for our police officers who are killed in the line of duty. Our military, mm-hmm. or police officers, but he'll go to the funeral of a thug who was killed and
was killed by police.
Who was a danger, a menace to society. That
mm-hmm.
I'm not.
You know,
surprised.
Dark mark. I talked about this when I was on with Clint. I do an unplugged segment with Clint Bellows on KCRO. Nebraska and iHeart America. I'm on for about 40 minutes. He just loves what I have to say. And Nebraska, they love me. I love Nebraska. So I said today, I was thinking about this. Okay, so Obama's the first time in our lifetime that we have a president that's our generation. You know, Michelle Obama and I are the same age. I mean, he's, I think, a year older or something. So I was saying this to the Nebraska listeners, and I believe this. I was raised in a two-parent, intact family home with rules, discipline, dinner every night at 6, you know, chores, worked, much like you did, Bob. You know, we knew right from wrong, and you knew what to do. We were raised that when somebody died, you went and paid your respects. You did the right thing. Maybe you weren't, you know, super good friends, or that might have been a friend of my grandmother's, but you went because it was what was done. It was what was right. And I was saying this today, that he is a product of a broken home, some lunatic mother. His grandparents were just socialist, anti-American. I think they moved to Hawaii probably before it was even a part of the United States. It's documented in Dinesh D'Souza's books about how his grandparents hated this country. And he was born here, there, with the Nigerian father, whatever. So I'm wondering if how much of that plays into he doesn't know right from wrong. What do you think?
I totally agree with you. I think it's just but you know what, there's a certain protocol that you have to follow, you know, and that protocol.
Yes, but Bob, my point is, if he never was expected to do that in his whole life,
right,
this is what he does now.
Right.
He didn't have a father. He didn't have that structured. His mom was off all over the place, you know. I think it's an absolute way of the way that he was raised, not knowing that it's the right. His people could tell him till they're, you know, he doesn't want to listen to anybody because he's never had to. He wasn't raised that way.
Yeah. No, I think you make a great point. I think it's very true. And, you know, I think, you know, we've had presidents prior to him who really have been, you know, reared and raised in the I don't want to say the right way or the whatever. I mean, the same way. I mean, something generation of sharing. I mean, I don't know if this is something new that we have to get used to or something or what. I really don't know.
Well, I can't imagine Trump doing something like this. Look at his beautiful family. Look at his children. Look at what they've all done. And they've done it on their own. And they've even said they had to work in high school. They had to have jobs. They all worked. All of his kids are beautiful. None of them have a drug problem or anything.
Don't drink. They don't drug. They don't smoke. They don't do anything. But they're successful people in society. And you know, I like this Eric, the son, his youngest son.
Oh yeah.
And he's so smart, and he knows how to talk to people.
And Ivanka,
respectful.
So you agree with my theory? I think it's a strong theory. I really do. I think that how you're raised is how you are the rest of your life. And even if you're president of the United States, if you were never told what to do as a child, you're not going to do what's right as an adult. So, and that's why I think he's just so crass and just he doesn't care because he never paid a consequence. I'll bet he never paid a consequence in his life as far as being disciplined or, you know, told what to do.
Right.
I wanted to also mention Gretchen Carlson, another good friend of our show. She's been on. She's a wonderful, wonderful person. She has her own show, Getting Real with Gretchen Gretchen Carlson. I sent her an email the other day that nobody's talking about the fact that we had lost 7 cops in 6 days. She did a story about it. I have it on my Facebook page. I'll put it on our California Connection Facebook page. She did a great job about 6 cops dying in 6 days. And Trace Gallagher did part of the story and said that this is the first time ever in history that we've started out the year with losing so many of our finest due to being shot and killed in the line of duty. So thank you, Gretchen. I love her. She said, whenever I email her, she emails me right away. She helps me with whatever we need. And I just cannot tell her how much I appreciate the fact that she brought that to the attention that her audience, I mean, she has a huge audience, and I'm just really thankful to her.
You know, more than anybody, I know you. I know you're just more sensitive about cops and the disgrace that's been happening about the lack of attention and our wonderful police officers who are trying to protect us every single day of their lives and because of your husband. And I just think that we need to continue to do that. And God bless you for bringing it to the attention. And you know, I'm sure that Gretchen, you know, probably didn't even think twice about.
Yeah, it was just, you know, to think, I just felt very fortunate to have made friends with her, you and I, and interviewing her and to be able to reach out to her. And she took that story and ran with it. And I was so honored by it. And it is a story that needs to get out. And again, this goes back to Obama probably never being taught to respect police officers. He was probably never taught the value of them. And real quickly, we have a few minutes left, but you know, Beyonce has a concert in, I think, Tampa, Florida, somewhere in Florida, and no cops are signing up to take the shift. Nobody wants to do it. The police unions are backing the police, and they're saying, because it's overtime. It's not mandatory. They can't make you go and work it. It's overtime.
Even if I was a fan, I wouldn't go either. I would boycott it.
Yeah. So we have a little over a minute left. Let's talk about tomorrow. I think Trump's going to take it. Super Tuesday. He's got Nevada. He's got Nevada locked up. I have no doubt. And I think Bernie Sanders is going to.
I think he's going to knock out Hillary. I think she's got lots of trouble. Did you hear what she said? I've been trying to not lie.
Could you imagine?
Oh my God.
And that was Roger, what's his name? He's an old-time CBS news reporter that was asking her about lying. Wasn't that uncomfortable to watch? It was uncomfortable to look at it. Yeah. Well, listen.
Makes your skin crawl, you know?
That's a whole other show. But anyway, great time with you today, Bob. We had a lot of fun things to talk about. Have a great time. You'll be in New Orleans next week. Again, I have Catherine Nance running for Republican Congress seat in the Central Valley, and we have Diamond himself because we'll be talking about Trump. And so have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening to California Connection. I'm Maureen.
Thanks, Maureen.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Maureen. Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.